Welcome back, everybody, to the Matrix Online Revisited Podcast. I am Vesuvius. A few quick things before we get into the body of the podcast and the conversation with our guest. Firstly, at the time of the uploading of this podcast, it is just about 4 months away from the scheduled release of The Matrix Resurrections. We still don't have a trailer yet, but the excitement is mounting. And our Matrix University professor, Lazarus, is planning a premiere party in northern New Jersey for whenever the movie eventually releases. Okay, it's called Project Matriculated, and I'll have a link for it in the description. As always, I've got some Matrix Online merch available, in which I'll put links for that in the description. I've got a couple of digital download items on sale, and my newest Matrix Online Ability Tree poster is available as well, and it prints really, really well. So check out my YouTube video if you want a closer look on that. Like everything else, I have links in the description. But for now, enjoy the episode.
Bring the ship up to broadcast depth. We're going in.
And today we have two friends on this episode. We have, from the French Connection, Oranos.
Bonsoir.
Who will be joining us from France. And from Radio Free Zion, we have one of the original DJs, DJ Fire.
Hello, hello.
The big question I have for people who play MXO, I want to know what they think about the movies. Did you love the Matrix trilogy before you started playing MXO?
Definitely. I mean, the first movie like changed my life in a pretty profound way. And I know that there was a lot of hate that got thrown on to like the sequels. I thought that they were, in a sense, a little forced. But at the same time, I thought the story was very well told, and you know, you kind of go into it with these sort of huge expectations, and that had a factor, I think, on people's reactions. But if you look at sort of the scope of the world they were telling, I think it was appropriate for the story.
Yeah, so that's why, were you like a gamer before, or did you join because you liked Matrix?
I'm not a super big gamer, especially, you know, first-person type games. It gives me motion sickness, so I couldn't really do it. But third-person... I had no problem with. And so for me, I really just like the idea of being in a facsimile of that world. You know, I was going through a period in life, and the ability to sort of have that type of control over the world that you have in that it's all code was something that was very appealing to me. And then, you know, during beta, you know, I think I got super hooked the first time I saw someone jump from like one building to another doing like one of those massive super jumps. I was like, oh, this is it. This game's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I think Hyper Jump was, it was so wonderful visually. And, you know, even when you were the one that was jumping, you know, you got a sense of the scope of how big the playable world was. And, you know, you could actually focus in on like objects and other players that you were going to be landing next to. And it just felt very real.
It's still great to do, actually, on the emulator. It's still a great thing to do, even today.
Yeah. I remember that it required a bit of it's like almost like an art to it, right? Like the certain key combination, and then as you're sort of looking and you're moving through the air, there was a talent that could go with it rather than just like hop, jump, right?
Yeah. It was like art. it took me a bit of time to get used to it, actually. And now I don't think I can do it anymore. I forgot how to do it, actually, like without, you know, clicking on the thing. And yeah, I don't remember how you do that, actually.
Well, yeah, I guess when you jump, it will calculate you, like where you're going to land. And I think that it's a little bit different now since our developer, Ryko, has kind of reprogrammed Hyperjump. Since how it was when the game went down in 2009.
Oh, so that's why it's not working every time I try to use it. I was wondering.
Yeah, and even the regular jumps, like if you just hit the space bar and you jump, like it's a little bit slower than it used to be because he had to reprogram that function.
It's clear that when the devs did it, they put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, he's doing a great job just being able to do that. Just being able to jump is great. Opening doors also is great. Next is the combat, I hope.
It's in the works, and he's close to a breakthrough. So he's got some breakthroughs with combat, but he has a private test server. So he'll show us some videos from that, but it's not live yet on the emulator.
So Fire, you were in beta, right? So that's how you got started.
Yeah, it was. So a good friend of mine was a DJ, and I'm not sure how he ended up getting connected to it. He was on like tech TV and buddies with Leo Laporte and stuff, and him and I kind of go way back. It was DJ Snowball, and now he's Steve Saylor, and now he does a bunch of accessibility oriented videos. He's blind. He's an albino. He's legally blind, and so his eyes, you know, he can't really see very far in front of him. So he loved that game. He could just get his face like right up to the monitor, and you know, he got into it. But what's great is he has this career now where he sort of does these accessibility reviews on games and software to make sure that they're able to be used by people who are differently abled. So when he got me into it, I was already doing sort of just on the side DJ stuff, and you know, nothing really big, just the local club up in Niagara Falls, Canada area. And it just seemed like a great merging of these two worlds, of this immersive, you know, cyberpunk-esque type of, you know, online community, combining that with the sort of like real world element of like you're a radio host. And so I thought that the combination of, you know, bringing that together was really interesting, especially as the game was very focused on more than just the grind. There was, you know, you go through your grind, you level up all your stuff, but then it all came down to the live events. And those live events, you would have two or three radio stations going on at once. There'd be a Machine radio station, a Merovingian radio station, a Zion radio station, and we're all kind of coordinating and sending people here and there, and sometimes on purpose and sometimes to distract, and you know, and sometimes you're listening into the other channels and stuff. And it was a really interesting way to sort of bring community together in a way that hadn't been done before.
Yeah, from what I've heard, they added the radio system just because Radio Free Zion was created, right? It wasn't exactly, in the game at first. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was super nice to not have to launch, you know, Winamp and at the time, and paste in the URL to stream the from the service, or iTunes. You could save it as a bookmark in iTunes or whatever.
I still use Winamp for the radio right now, so it's still a thing. It's still a thing.
it still whips the llama's ass.
Yeah, exactly. So you were a Merovingian from what you told us, right?
Yeah, I tried Machine for a little bit, just didn't like it. Tried Zion for a bit, didn't really fit, and it kind of, you know, lended to myself as a human, I guess, all my values and who I was. Right, I'm a bisexual male who I love all kinds of operating systems, and you know, I'm a Mac, Windows, and Linux user at the same time. You know, for folks that don't know, I'm product manager for VMware Fusion and VMware Workstation. So just running different operating systems just has been something that I always did. You know, like my machine that would have the Matrix Online would be playing. Beside that, I'd have a couple of BeigeBox 386s with Linux on it just to test, you know, some distributed computing stuff. So yeah, it was very, I always felt at home with the Merv, you know, straddling that line in the middle and you know, picking the right side based on the needs of the time instead of just the dogma of the groupthink.
Yes, Merovingian is actually the only faction I've never joined, the only organization I've never joined, which is weird because with my accent you would think I would join them, but nope, I never did. Don't know why.
You could have been the leader.
Yeah, I could have overthrown the guy, but nope.
You could have replaced Flood and actually been interesting.
Yeah, and also Rarebit hated me because every time he was playing the Merovingian, I would come to him and speak in French. And he would be like always ignoring me and be like, he must have hated me. Because every time I would do that, every time.
Well, you got to understand, he's from California. Well, at the time he was in California, he was running a US-based video game.
I know, yeah, but he was fun, you know.
You can only ask so much of Mr. Rarebit.
Yeah. So how did the radios work back then? Was it legal?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. sort of.
It wasn't illegal yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the story. You know, we did the beta thing and I think, I can't remember if it was just before launch or like, I think it was at the very end of the beta, we had some event and we, you know, broadcast through the event and it was fine. But afterward, I, you know, Snowball, I had, you know, DJ Snowball, I had some space on one of my websites that I hosted, and he had given him a subdomain and like a WordPress installation, and he was posting his shows. And that became a problem because what had happened was apparently the Wachowskis somehow came across it and found this podcast, and they, you know, they work for Warner. And of course, you know, Warner has some pretty tight licensing around their music. And of course there was some of Warner's music inside of the stream. And so I got a call at, you know, umpteen o'clock in the, you know, midnight, whatever, from DJ Sundog. And he was like, "Hey, I just got a funny note from the Wachowskis, and they really need you to take that thing off your website." And the first thing I thought of was like, "Oh my God, they know my website."
Oh my God. It's crazy.
The Wachowskis saw me.
Yeah, and Wachowskis are like recluse. They don't talk. So it's, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and you can tell that it, like, they told somebody at Warner who told somebody, and or like it circled around until it finally got to Sundog's inbox. And he had to give me a call to like, "Hey, play nice," which, you know, we did, and it was fine and dandy. But yeah, it was not illegal. But at the same time, Warner was like, "Yo, could you not just be so open about that?"
That's awesome.
And how did you get access to beta? Did you buy your way in like me, or were you chosen? Because I'm going to go on a guess here and say that you probably had a resume that you could submit to them. And maybe were chosen because of your skills with the computers.
Yeah, I don't think so. At the time, I was nobody. You know, like I was just in college and, you know, just doing it for fun. I got in from Sundog, basically, because, yeah, like, can't remember the details, but it was through Snowball. Him and I were getting connected, and he mentioned that this was happening. I was like, "What? This sounds amazing." So I reached out to Sundog because he apparently was giving off invites, and I was lucky enough to get one.
I'm jealous.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm jealous too. I found out late, so I guess beta started somewhere around the summer in 2004, and originally supposed to launch somewhere around November 2004, but it got pushed back several times. I actually gained entrance. I found out that it was in beta testing. I can't remember how I found out, but I wound up just going on like electronicboutique.com and just ordering it, and I was able to download it right away, and I just stayed up real, real late that night and just jacked in and did all the updates and everything and finally got into beta.
My computer jacked was too in. Shitty, so I couldn't get in beta. I had my computer was really bad, but I bought one just for the Matrix Online. Yeah. And it was still a shitty computer.
Did the same thing recently for Cyberpunk, and that was a huge mistake.
Oh no.
Ooh. Yeah, I had a computer that a friend of mine built, and I had a pretty good video card, but the motherboard crapped out, and it crapped out at the best time possible, the end of beta event. Oh. So I completely missed that, and then I wound up getting myself a Dell Inspiron, and I was like, "Oh, this will handle the game real well," and I made it through, but it never had an impressive performance with the game.
It'd be really impressive to see it like in 4K with like, you know, ray tracing and all the other fancy features that have made it into video cards nowadays.
Yeah, I think it can be done.
The game looked really well, sure, but you know, the game has to have sort of those things implemented, right? And
yeah.
I do remember though that at the time the game was really ahead of its time as far as the graphics look and feels go. It used some new features of like the Unreal Engine or whatever engine it was using, like some lighting and stuff like that that most games hadn't figured out yet, and they made a really good use of it.
What I loved the most was the emotes and all of that. We had so many options to just interact with people, and that was the only game like that, I think.
Yeah, it certainly gave, you know, Fortnite a history.
Oh yeah, Fortnite
somewhere to start, right?
I forgot about that.
Even though there was a gap where like that game came and went, and then, you know, years later sort of Fortnite came around, but just the notion of jacking in and just hanging out and like having those emotes there just to to play with and just express yourself. That was, there was no game to that part of it. You could just log in. And that was one thing I remember, like, I spent a lot of time just, you know, futzing around. And I remember my parents being like, why do you spend so much time on this game? Like, you're just, you're not really doing anything. And it's like, you know, well, there's people here and we're hanging out and we're talking and just having fun. And nowadays you're like, oh my God, kids playing Fortnite, what's going on? But so I can relate more to my parents, but at the same time, you know, it's, it was just a way to interact.
I was wondering something about Radio Free Zion. Were you close with the development team or not at all?
Not particularly, no. It was more just of a, you know, user producer type of person as opposed to getting down with the creators. Although nowadays I would have made my way to say hi and get in, and be known there.
Yeah.
So you must be aware that there were rumors that the Radio Free Zion was kind of state sponsored and that it was a part of the development team. So you guys did such a fantastic job covering the game, and I guess the reliability of the radio station, it was always on. There was always somebody talking into a microphone, that people thought that it was a Sony, or not Sony, I guess Monolith entity that was kind of built into the game and passed off as player based.
That's interesting. I can see that. Like, we put a lot of time into the schedule, and the folks that were helping, you know, create the calendar had experience like in the radio industry. So you could really feel the professionalism coming off it. And even as a DJ, like, we would have meetings and, you know, we would have sort of, you know, guidance around how to, what to say, what not to say, things you can't say to not upset Warner Brothers and Sony and things like that. So,
like what?
It felt really professional. Oh, just, you know, like, I don't even remember what it was at the time, but like, you know, if a developer tells you something, you can't talk about it.
Oh, sure.
Things like that.
But that's great that they kind of confided in you guys. You had this unwritten relationship with the development team, because you were probably doing a better job of interacting with the player base. And this is something that it's a theory of mine, that the LeSig program that came along later when a live event team went away was like springboarded off of what Radio Free Zion was able to accomplish as a player base. So we're like, hey, we have like a really mature and intelligent player base. Let's give them a little bit of responsibility for the game. So Radio Free Zion was really groundbreaking, I think, at the time. And I'm kind of seeing this from like I was like the kid in the audience that couldn't quite see the screen. I remember being told about Radio Free Zion and I couldn't access it. There was a big party at Tabor, DeBeer Court, and everybody, I think, had Radio Free Zion like as a faction tag. Now I may be remembering this incorrectly, but I remember seeing Radio Free Zion everywhere. And I didn't know why. Does that ring a bell?
I feel like that was in beta still, like close to the end event, and because there was a new feature that dropped and it allowed us to like edit the tag above our heads as we were floating around. And so yeah, it was an effort that you'd put like your Merv or Machine or Zion and or RFZ. I definitely remember that. And it was funny because like one of the interesting things that it did was, It really made as a player and just as a, you know, as a player and as someone, you know, who's not a developer in the game, it really made you feel a sense of ownership, right? It made you feel like you weren't just playing a game, you weren't just connected to a community. You really felt like you needed to be there. Like if you missed your Radio Free Zion slot, like you weren't going to come on the next time your name came up in the schedule. So you felt like, you know, a level of commitment, because these were users who, you know, you're going to go on during an event and there's going to be stuff happening. And if you're not there to help guide, you know, from a 50,000 foot sort of perspective, you know, something bad might happen to the faction, or you might lose out on, you know, whatever the event was. And so it was just something that was so groundbreaking, because not only did it, you know, it had the professionalism and like all the really amazing people behind it, but like I said, it just gave you the sense of ownership that I don't think I've seen come around in a game since then.
Yeah, it's like the live event. We don't see that anywhere else. You know, it was really a Matrix Online thing. I don't think there is any with that type of live events like it was, like, there is nothing like it, I think.
I mean, like, I think World of Warcraft sort of got close, but it was still not like a time-based thing. We're like, okay, like 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, everybody show up at such and such a square because, you know, stuff in the game's going to happen. And it didn't require the game to really do anything differently to accommodate that. And to that, you know, to further that, the events team could run their own stuff. And even people could do their own stuff. It was just show up, here's what we're going to do, go nuts. And when the events did happen, then, you know, it was really something special because the characters that you would see weren't stuff that you would just bump across. You couldn't just go to like that one place where Morpheus is always, his NPC is always standing and go yeah. wave. Like when Morpheus shows up, it's like, holy crap, something's going down. Right.
Did you meet Morpheus before he died?
I did. Yeah. And then like the whole episode where he died and they took his body and carried it somewhere.
Oh yeah. Body.
It was really flies. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
What kind of music did you play on Radio Free Zion? You personally, was it like yeah. Matrix-like music or something else?
I like to think so. It was a combination, I think, of like, you know, hard rock, metal type stuff at the time, as well as I had like a techno side. So I was very much into like psychedelic trance. And so that to me was sort of like the droning, we're hackering and doing stuff. And then combining that with sort of lyrical, you know, metal like music as the intensity would move up as the when we would do a live event, you would certainly try and time the music that you had, you know, based on sort of the pace of what's happening, and you had to be really dynamic and in real time about that kind of stuff. You know, it's like, oh, like the machines are on the move, it's like, okay, here, get something that's got like 180 BPM, like turn that on, right? It's like, oh, everybody mobilize, and you have to sort of, you know, you're building the atmosphere for that.
Yeah, I remember some stuff like sometimes you would have like sound bites of Neo talking at the end of the first movie, or Morpheus talking like Zion. You know, there would be like sound bites like that. That's all I remember because Radio Free Zion was like gone after a few months, right? When it launched, when the game launched.
Yeah, I can't remember specifically how long, but. I know, like, I think, like, I feel like the peak of the engagement was that final beta event.
Yeah.
Where it just seemed like everybody was all on at the same time. The servers didn't crash. There was just a small number of us. The radio networks were all blaring. And then we did as much as we could to try and carry that forward. But it was a lot of momentum. And it really relied on the community sort of, you know, snowballing it.
Yeah.
And that was really challenging after, you know, after basically the corporate stuff stepped in and all the nerfing happened and, you know, everything
and SOE, went
the way that it yeah. did.
Do you remember?
So you were around for the Sony acquisition?
Yeah. And I remember because that was around the time they transitioned to a different live event team, if I recall. And we had hopes, you know, but at the same time, it was like, you know, when things get into the hands of big companies like that, there's always the bottom line that they're looking at. And, you know, over the span of time, that bottom line gets more and more focused upon. And so it's hard for a big company to really respect and grasp the value of having a tight community that's rallying behind anything that isn't a specific product, right? And so for these folks, you're like, oh, you're playing the Matrix Online. You gave us $50 and you're not giving us anything per month because it wasn't a monthly charge. It was, you know, one shot. And, you know, that probably gets really expensive to run those servers. And particularly if you're not having people playing 24/7 the way that you do like World of Warcraft, you know, like with, you know, MXO, it was very live event driven. So if you didn't have a live event, people... you'd come in, you'd do your grind, you'd leave, and okay, that's that. But putting in the live events were really what made everybody sort of come together. And so I could see where a bean counter at the end of the day is going, well, we already took their money. How much longer are we going to pay for these servers?
I recall a $14.99 or $14.95 monthly subscription to Matrix Online.
Yeah.
I thought that it was like an either or. It was like you could either pay the upfront stuff, or then you had to pay like the $15 a month, but the game was free.
I think when SOE took over, they had a pass with like a few games. That if you got that pass, you would get like, I think you would get subscription to these games. I think there was something like that, yeah.
Yeah, the station pass.
That's
it. I recall
it.
The station pass being like 20 or 25 a month, but you got the whole library.
Yeah.
And I was not a gamer. I was a Matrix fan. So when the game ended, I was like, well, maybe I'll go back to like some console games. And I got bored very quickly and just started doing something else with my time. But yeah, I was really just there for the Matrix. But I do recall, and I have the receipt here somewhere in all my Matrix Online cardboard boxes. I think I paid $50 for the game, and I believe it was $15 for the month, or $15 for each month.
Yeah,
and I always did a month-to-month instead of a year thing, which would have been cheaper.
How many DJs did Radio Free Zion add?
At least a dozen. There was two or three Mervs, I recall. There was only a couple of us. And then mostly Zion, and then like two machines, maybe. Yeah, probably less than a dozen. And it, you know, fluctuated over time, depending on, you know, what point in time you're counting it.
Do you have any of your old intros and outros and recordings or anything?
I'd been looking for it when you reached out. I was like, oh man, I gotta see if I can find some old screenshots and any of that stuff. If I do, it's on a hard drive at my parents' place in the basement with a box of other stuff that I don't have here in California with me. So my parents in Niagara Falls. So it's, like I said, it's in cold archive.
Are you still in touch with some of the DJs?
Yeah. So like DJ Snowball, him and I still stay in touch quite a bit. He does a lot of really great stuff now. He's just mentioned just before we get started that he does accessibility review for software and games in particular. His moniker is Blind Gamer. So if you look up Blind Gamer on YouTube, you'll find him. And he's an albino. And so albinism has a typical character trait where your eyes, I'm not sure the technical term, but your eyes sort of shift left and right constantly. And so it's really hard to focus on anything. And in addition to being like super nearsighted. And so when he would play the Matrix and when he would do his DJ, his face would be about, you know, a foot away from the screen, or less, because he just needed to see. And so him and I've stayed in touch, you know, this whole time over the years. You know, I watched him go from being a gamer to working on tech TV with Leo Laporte to working now doing his own thing as a sort of an accessibility review. And it's a really great service he's doing for the community. And particularly because I think it raises the issue that, you know, games for folks can be an escape, and that escape, you know, doesn't always come from able-bodied people. People who need escape who, you know, might not be able to walk, or, you know, there's a variety of reasons why we play these games. And I think that folks who are differently abled get a solace from it that it's hard for us, you know, normies to sort of relate to. And so the work that he does is awesome because it really showcases, hey, this game is really trying to cater to, you know, an accessibility user, or at the very least is doing the right thing by this and bringing them into the fold, not necessarily catering, you know, marketing to that user, but just having support for things like peripherals that are different, right? There's the Xbox controller that looks like a couple of, you know, turntables almost, but it's for folks that don't have the dexterity of their fingers or whatever to be able to still use a control pad. And so I think that's just super important. And I do hope that, you know, if the Matrix ever introduces another game, that accessibility is a huge part of it, because, you know, who you are in the real life and who you are in the game, they're not the same thing. And I think the Matrix was one of those games that really sort of brought the idea that, you know, you could be this avatar, you know, like we all had our avatar pictures and whatnot, but you sort of identified with the character that you would create. And I think that spurned this whole, you know, RPG type of character creation thing where you really get attached to it because you've invested yourself into that persona.
I was going to follow up on the Blind Gamer's YouTube channel, because there's a video that I came across a while back, and then when we started speaking on Twitter, I went back and rewatched. So it's Follow the White Bride, a Matrix short story where Snowball has written a story and then he kind of reads it to us as the audience. And it's a very good story. It's fun. It's pretty short. I think it's got to be about a 5-minute video, and actually inspired me to narrate one of my short stories. And then, which is the perspective of a young child, who wants to play with the potentials that the Oracle babysits, in her apartment. But, you know, that they're very, you know, gifted, and they're very smart, and this kid, you know, it isn't quite a potential, but, you know, just being around the Oracle and the potentials gains access to something that might give him powers for a short time. So that's actually something that I have one of my kids narrating, so that we can get, you know, onto this virtual world with a little bit of voice acting, and something I wish I had worked on earlier and am currently working on now. So that will be coming soon, and that's all from Mr. Snowball's YouTube channel, Follow the White Bride.
Well, that's so cool. And his voice, though, too. Like, he's got a voice for radio. It's so deep, bassy, and just, you know, if he's got a good microphone in front of him, it just sounds great.
Yeah, and when I watched it, I got taken back immediately to, like, when I was in elementary school and we would go to the library and the librarian would say, okay, so this is the book that we're going to read. And he like draws you into the story. And I got this very comfortable and relaxed feeling. And I just got really into that story in that video. So I'll actually put a link to that, so those listeners can follow up on that video.
Awesome. I hope he hears you, what listens to this in the future and hears you saying that. I'm sure he'd really appreciate it. He's got a big heart, let me tell you.
And that comes through too. Just listening to him speak, I believe that.
Yeah, check it out.
So, Aranos, I don't want to step on the beginning of your question. So,
I already forgot.
Fire off another one.
I already forgot. I was thinking Radio Free Zion had a huge influence on the community, even long after it was gone. Did you have some people tell you, "Hey, you're from Radio Free Zion"? You know, did this happen or not?
No, I kept my sort of my Matrix life and my sort of commercial self independent for the longest time. So no one really knew who I was. It was just, oh, that's just DJ Fire. Whoosh, in and out.
Not even in the Matrix when it was Tyrone?
In the Matrix, yeah. I mean, I would have, you know, one of my characters had DJ Fire as their name. So it was, you know, every once in a while, like, oh, hey, what's up? And that was always really something. But yeah, it was pretty rare.
Did you level many characters to 50?
I had at least two. And then my DJ character was just like pretty low level. And I think if I recall, we had to try and keep it under a certain level because there was certain swag that you could wear that, like, if you got over like level 20, you couldn't wear it anymore. Or maybe it was the other way around.
You couldn't wear clothing with a higher level, I think. But you could any level under that. I'm very sorry about my accent tonight. I'm very tired. I'm like losing my English. I'm sorry.
I'm half French. Not bothering me.
You are French?
Half.
Oh, the good half, I hope.
Je ne sais pas. Je suis de Quebec. Ce n'est pas la même chose.
No. It's very cute, the Quebecois accent, actually. I really like it.
Cute. I usually hear it referred to as like, I went to Paris and I was speaking French, and I remember the waiter just being like, just speak English, it's fine.
Well, we can
I don't believe a French waiter came off like that.
No, it's not our type to do that. French waiters are very nice. So everybody's wondering something about Radio Free Zion, is why it ended, what happened, you know, why?
That's a good question. I remember, so I don't remember specifically like the details, but I remember there was a lot of drama and trauma at the time. And I think Sundog like kind of just gave up. Like there was some pressure, and it was, you know, hosting the servers was probably costing funds. So maybe it was just a matter of running out of money, but I remember there was a bunch of drama at the time. And when it happened, it was like, it felt sudden, but at the same time, it had been a couple weeks in the making where we knew like, oh, geez, something might happen. We might not be around. And then just, oop, wait, we can't connect anymore.
Yeah, it kind of happened like that. It just disappeared, right? Just vanished.
And Sundog was really hard to find for a long time, too. Like, as that went down, his persona went with it.
Yeah, now he's using his DJ Sundog name again, it seems. On Twitter, at least.
I remember bumping into him on Twitter a couple of years ago, and I was like, oh, no way, that's you.
Nobody found him for a long time until I just typed DJ Sundog on Twitter. And there he was, like 15 years, and nobody looked for him on Twitter. That was very fun.
I feel like I didn't look on Twitter because I thought that Twitter came around like well after The Matrix Online. But I think it was more so after The Matrix Online had launched. So I'm thinking somewhere in the 2006 range for Twitter. And that's just, I didn't join Twitter right away. So
I think it's more like 2009, 2010 Twitter, if I remember correctly. When it started to be a bit famous, that's when it happens, yeah. So it was after the game ended, I think.
Yeah, the game ended in phases, but the Twitter was 2006 launched, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
It was 2007?
So did you ask Sundog why he left, or you just leave?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, everyone's got their reasons for their stuff. And the conversation didn't really get around to that. More just, you know, two ships sort of passing, waving. Hey.
Yeah. Because it's like one of those mysteries about MXO, you know, what happened.
Well, when you track him down and you get him on the show, it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about it.
Yeah, Vesuvius.
Well, that's a question that I'll ask. But you know, when it comes to those situations that might be, I guess challenging. You know, it's not an answer that anybody needs. So,
oh yeah,
I'll ask the question. It'll be up to him whether he shares.
Yeah, if he doesn't want to answer, like fine. Yeah.
And sometimes the mystery is preferred anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if we still talk about The Matrix right now, it's because there is a lot of mystery around it. You know, the Wachowskis didn't just explain everything. So that's why we keep talking about it. So yeah, a part of mystery is always good, yeah.
I know, I for one am thoroughly looking forward to the fourth installment. And it's, you know, it's kind of like Vesuvius, what you mentioned earlier, how the game itself felt like an extension of the storyline. And, you know, like Neo was, you know, gone and maybe he was going to come back. Maybe not. We didn't know. And meanwhile, you had all these other characters and this whole other, the truce and this whole other dimension to what was happening in the world. And it just was like a way to continue that storyline. You know, you had the Enter the Matrix game, which told like that sort of separate side event. And that was really neat because you're watching the movie being like, oh, I remember, I did that in that game. I blew up that thing. But then, you know, then it all ended and it, you know, kind of went the way that it did. And, you know, good stories end. That's, you know, for real on that. So it'll be interesting to see where they take it. But I do hope that there's, you know, something that mimics, you know, what MXO did because it was so unique and so groundbreaking at the time.
Do you think they're going to use some stuff from MXO, like the death of Morpheus and stuff like that?
Probably not. If I were the Wachowskis, let me rephrase that. Who knows what's in their head as far as where they want the story to go. And if the answer is the things that happen in MXO lead toward that, then why not? Certainly not calling it out in the way that like Enter the Matrix, that sort of went down. But at the same token, not being as a writer, not having to be beholden to, you know, all of that non-canon stuff. And I look at Star Wars, there's, you know, the Clone Wars animated series, the first one, which was different than that. There was like a movie or whatever.
It was great.
Yeah. It was great. It was like, you know, it looked like the animation from like the Powderpuff Girls did it or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was unique, but that's like absolutely not canon. And, you know, if you go to Disney, it's like in the corner of like not stuff that is we consider happened category.
Did you have a favorite characters in MXO? Not one from the movies, but, you know, a new character.
Ooh, hard to honestly, I don't remember well enough. I remember we were talking earlier about Flood, and I'm like, oh yeah, Flood. But outside of, you know, him being the Merv's assistant or second in command or whatever.
Ukemi, you remember Ukemi?
No.
The werewolf girl?
No, no. It's like hard to believe, man. It's been like 16 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah, so Flood was actually Italian. So when
really?
The emulator came around, yeah, he's Italian.
He speaks so French all the time.
Does he?
Yeah.
Well, hold on, because I can play some of his voiceover stuff. When the emulator came around, we were able to extract a lot of the game files, or somebody was able to extract them.
Yeah, so I put everything on the drive. Play
Flood.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, yeah, you know. So let me pick a longer one. Okay, so this is about 24 seconds.
The Merovingian asked me to tell you how valuable you are to him. How much you mean to his organization. Bah! I cannot understand how you've come so far so fast. What is it with humans? You are the most flawed, lazy, corrupt, and treacherous animals. But when you want something badly enough, nothing can stop you. If I were inclined to care, I might even be impressed.
It doesn't sound Italian.
No, it doesn't sound Italian at all.
He
sounds more
sounds
like Stefan from
snappish.
SNL, you know. Yeah, no,
or like almost like George Takei.
Yeah, George Takei with a less deeper voice. Yeah, Agent Pace or Pace, it depends how you want to say it. She's Italian, right?
She is Italian. Yeah.
Yeah, and Persephone is Italian, so we have a good Italian representation in MXO.
How long did you play? Did you play all the way up through the end?
Yeah. From the original, from the, you know, I was late coming into the beta, so I was in just before some of like the final beta events. But all the way through the game until it closed down, I remember, if I recall, there was like an event, and at the end of it all, basically everybody dropped dead, and the screen went red, and you could sort of look around and see that everyone was dead, and then you just sort of eventually got logged out.
Yeah, we got meat-wadded. Where were you during that final event?
Oh, I don't remember. Whatever one of those squares near the portal with a phone booth is.
Yeah.
Mirror.
Yeah, I was in Mirror Central. I was on the Hypercube Monument.
I wasn't there. I don't know why. I forgot, I think. I'm mad at myself.
I did get my fraps up and running. So I've got some video of the last little while for the game before it shut down.
Oh yeah, fraps. Good times.
Yeah, well, just that is great. Because any other game would have just, you know, just ended and that's it. But Matrix Online just had to kill everybody and to act like it was the Matrix just kicking everybody out, you know. It worked perfectly well with the Matrix, you know.
Yeah, the Matrix went through, it rebooted. You might not come back up. Just looking at the emulator here, I didn't realize that this was a project that has been continuing. So like someone has taken it upon themselves to create a server and a client.
Yeah, he's been working on it since before the shutdown because he started extracting data packets and didn't get all of them, which is why we have limited functionality. But slowly but surely recreating all of the code to his own to avoid any legal stuff that may occur, but the code is all his.
Yeah, and he's alone. He's doing that alone. Yeah.
I see they issued something very recently. I'm like, ooh, can I help? I want to go contribute. Is it Apache licensed? Let's find out.
Occasionally, he'll have us go gather information that you have to actually track down in the emulator. So for a while, it was like elevator doors and regular doors and light switches. So, but yeah, not in a while. I think we have somebody that has, like we have an archive of all the live event
well, not the live event, the critical missions. So somebody is just transcribing those into like a text instead of a screenshot based.
Yeah, it's on the drive. I created a Google Drive where I put everything I find on the Matrix, basically. Not just Matrix Online, but even the Matrix. So I have all the storyboards and concept arts. I invite people to come to the Discord and see it for themselves, because it's a lot of work. It's almost 15 gigabytes of just screenshots and a lot of tough stuff from alpha and beta. And yeah, it's been great just archiving and looking at stuff. I found a lot of stuff that was like buried deep down in the internet. And yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet. Maybe I'm going to make a website or something. I'll send you a link if you want. It's a lot of good nostalgic feels, you know.
Oh, I dig it. It was a period of my life that, you know, I needed that game in my life at that time. And if I didn't have that community around, I don't know where I would be today, you know, like in mid 2002, I was 21 and my 17-year-old brother had taken his life. And so life for me got really, really messed up for a couple of years. And just being able to log in or to, you know, to jack into the MXO and just be a part of something and felt like I was really contributing, like I needed that at that time. So nostalgic feels, yeah, like I got some big ones there.
Yeah, me too. I had just lost my dad and I was in a dark place too, you know. And that game made me feel like I mattered somehow, you know, like I was a part of a community and I would make these small little movies with my best friend at the time. And they would be shown in game during an event and like the Blue Sky concert. And I felt like I mattered, you know, I felt like I was seen and it was great. Yeah, it was the right thing at the right time, I feel. Yeah.
And it was before like the trolls had taken over the internet too, right? Like the only people online at that time were folks that knew how to use a computer.
Yeah.
And, you know, or Blackberries didn't even have the web on them yet at the time, right? And those were, you know, years away still. So, you know, iPhone didn't happen until 06, 07 kind of time. So it was really just something for folks that might have been misfits.
Cyberpunks.
You know, in a sense. Yeah.
Yeah, Matrix is about misfits anyway, so it's like Neo doesn't fit in, you know.
And yet they cleverly designed him so that everyone would sort of feel some sort of identification through him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a blank state, basically. A blank slate.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Literally and figuratively. Just look at the guy.
And just look at Keanu acting, you know. Sometimes he's a bit, you know, mono-expressive.
Well, with all the screenshots that I see of the movie, you know, a lot of people are sharing those where there's an expression on his face. So it's almost like revisionist history. Like I'm going back and thinking, well, maybe he's a good actor, because now every time I see a screenshot of The Matrix, he has an expression on his face. And it's either intense or, you know, it's inquisitive or something. So maybe he's a really good actor and he's just fooling everybody.
I think the Wachowskis asked him to be like kind of like Buddha, you know, passive, never having any expression, kind of like to show that Neo is becoming a machine, you know, slowly he's losing a bit of his humanity, especially in Reloaded, where he's always just reacting and barely speaking and having no expression. And I think it's a choice, not the best choice, but it's a choice.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know that they were filming the fourth one here in San Francisco just before the pandemic, and I was out of town at the time, so I wasn't able to see. But I did, you know, someone recorded for me a, you know, small video from their office where they could see, like Keanu on some sort of harness thing, running up the side of a building. So I'm really looking forward to whatever it is they're going to do, but. Yeah, the fact that they filmed it in San Francisco in like February of 2020, we'd have that movie now if it wasn't for,
yeah, you know, Yeah.
Gesturing wildly at everything.
We would have a trailer at least. We don't even have a trailer.
But they did pull the release date back, so we're looking at like December 22nd, I want to say, as opposed to like April 2022. So
a trailer would be nice. I'm just saying. If you're listening, Lana, if you're listening, a trailer would be nice. Yeah, I'm actually pretty optimistic about Matrix 4. I don't know why. It's just, I don't know. I want it to be good. I really want to.
Yeah. And the fact that, Lana's at the helm, I think that really is going to go far. You know, unless what I'm hoping of is it's not like a prequel Lucasfilm situation where the progenitor comes down and has a bunch of really bad ideas and everyone's like, yeah, do that.
Well, that was the case in Reloaded and Revolution, actually, where they were like full, they had like total control on the movies. And so nobody was like, hey, you may be going a bit too far with the architect scene, you know, or something like that. So it's kind of what happened. And I think now they grew up a bit as directors. So yeah, I'm optimistic. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure that the studios shake them a little bit. But that architect scene, that was one of my favorites.
Yeah, but it's not for everybody. Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah. The thing that I heard about Reloaded and Revolutions is that the Wachowskis kind of became like Kubrick and decided to do like 60 takes every time. So the actors would be exhausted. And so you can a bit feel it that the actors are not really there in the movie. I don't know who said that. I think it's Bill Pope who said that. And it was a really interesting interview because we don't really talk about what really happened behind the scenes. And so it's very interesting.
Well, we'll just have to hold our breath and see what happens.
Yeah.
In December.
So can you tell us a story about maybe a live event that you were covering or one that you participated in or maybe something big that happened with your character or your faction that you remember? Any fond memories or stories about playing the game?
I think the most interesting thing that I got to be a part of was the beta finale event, for sure. I don't remember a lot of the details. I remember there was a lot of running around, and we had to get stuff, and I remember the machines would just, like, show up and drop, like, the equivalent of nukes on everybody, and you just kill, like, 30, 50 people in a screen at a time, and then they'd run off, and we're all like, we're trying to play the game! Why? You know, we're yelling at each other, and that was, you know, part of the fun was like, you know, we're like, just let us play the game, and you're like, no, part of the game is, like, not letting you play the game. and so, yeah, I mean, everyone felt together. I mentioned earlier it was a lot smaller than when it went live, and because of the trolls hadn't taken over yet. So it was really just the folks who really wanted to be there. And I remember coordinating through the radio network. You know, I'd get reports from, you know, texts or like, you know, in-game messages from one group, and they're like, oh, we're doing this thing over here. And you would, you know, announce like, hey, Mervs, like, go. We're meeting over at whatever location to try and do whatever the thing it was that we were trying to do at the time. And just being a part of that, like driving the traffic and sort of steering this, you know, this team. It was really something that I haven't seen since. And you can kind of get similar type of effects from things like, you know, Call of Duty and, you know, co-op type of games. And, you know, so they really helped that, but that's all sort of like, by design. What made MXO amazing was that happened organically. Yeah, there was a live event, but the way that people participated in that live event was organic. It was, you know, driven. It was collaborative. You know, there would be trying to decipher all the stuff outside of the game where you're on, like, you know, going to web pages trying to find Easter eggs and then collecting all of that and then having a big master document that you'd give everybody else in the team, like, all right, here's what we think is happening right now. And we're going to find Neo's corpse, I swear, whatever it was that we were trying to do at the time. And, or Neo, it was Morpheus's corpse or Neo's
corpse, or other. Neo's RSI.
Right, like right.
His code.
Residual self-image.
Yeah.
Because it had been untethered. So, you know, it was one with the Matrix at that time.
The first events were like crazy. Just the scope of it, so many characters at the same time, and the cryptic messages, and you would get emails from Morpheus, and it was insane. I remember I barely spoke any English when I started playing, and it was like overwhelming, all the stuff there was to read and translate, and I loved it. The first few months were crazy.
And it was neat, like I mentioned earlier, when you'd have what would typically be in other games just non-player characters, you know, these were people who were driven by someone on the community team who got the privilege to sit in front of Morpheus's account and walk him around. And it makes you wonder, you know, watching him or her do that, you're like, oh, like what kind of buttons do you have access to? Like, what can he do? Right? Mm-hmm. Can he jump over two buildings? You know, that kind of stuff. I know for me, I got to meet the Merovingian, and that was super exciting. You know, I'm now thinking of Flood and whatnot, leading us to this place where we got in, and all of a sudden, you know, there he is, and you're like, holy crap, that's actually him. Probably, sort of, as much as we could get, but that's actually him. And it was really something unique.
And did you speak in French to him just to bother him?
Yeah, a little bit. It was pretty cheesy, though. I don't think the character, whoever was behind it, spoke French. So
I remember that they used to say mon ami at the end of every sentence just to be like, okay, I said a French thing, so I'm done. It was always mon ami.
Friends everywhere.
Yeah, I have a lot of good memories about live events. Like I think I've met every character except for the architect that I've never met.
Was he even in the game?
He was in the game, yeah. Yeah.
Huh. He was. He did a couple of live events, but he was mostly kind of behind the scenes.
Well, and I guess that if you were to see him, you probably would have had to have been on the machine team anyway.
I was.
Well, there you go.
But I was, but he was very rare. Like, even the Oracle showed up more often than him, so yeah. Hmm. I met the Oracle, though. That's something.
And here we are, like, after all these years, you're like, I met that person or that avatar or that, you know, RSI or however we describe it. But it was so memorable that here we are 15 years later doing a podcast talking about it.
Yeah, every time I rewatch the movies, I'm like, I'm pointing at the screen just like Leonardo DiCaprio, you know. I'm like, I saw her, I talked to her. I feel like a crazy person just pointing at my screen like, oh, one time I screamed at that guy.
I know, it's like, I wonder if we'll watch a new movie and we'll say, who's writing this? Is Rabbit writing these lines or is this Chadwick?
I'm less, because Vesuvius thinks that a lot of the Matrix Online is going to be canon to the movie. And I'm less optimistic when it comes to that. Yeah, I don't know. I hope we don't get like a giant assassin made of flies in the movies. That would be very weird. I just hope we don't get it.
But if they did a little fly thing at some point, you'd be like Leonardo DiCaprio. You'd be like, I saw those flies.
Yeah. I know what that is.
Yeah, I have this vision. But like, you know how when they were interviewing or interrogating Neo and you see a camera and then you go through the camera and you're in the room? Like, they had something like that in one of the cinematics where you see a fly on a window and you go through the window and then you're in the room with Persephone and the Merovingian. And I hope that shows up in the part four. It would be such a nod and nobody would get it except for us. So we would feel special and then probably feel silly telling other people what it meant.
We'd be like that episode of Breaking Bad and the entire movie is just about them chasing a fly.
Yes. Yes.
Just Neo and Trinity running around after a fly.
So, Fire, tell us about what you're doing these days and VMware.
Yeah, so I'm a product manager, which is a bit of a weird title. I certainly don't know what that would have meant while I was playing the game. But basically, I indirectly drive a team of engineers to build something that customers actually want to use. So the product, I work for VMware, the company. I've been with them for about 12 years now. And as product manager, I own a group of products. specifically Workstation and Fusion. And Workstation lets you run Windows on, or I should say, run Windows on Windows inside of a virtual machine, or Linux on Windows, or Windows on Linux. And then Fusion lets you run Windows and Linux on a Mac, and Mac OS as a virtual machine. And so the Workstation was originally called VMware 1.0 for Linux. So it was the first product that the company ever created. And this was in like 1999 or so. So when I came in 2009, I sort of got to work with these products. And then in 2015, I got promoted and I basically owned them. And I've owned them since then. So they're great. We, hundreds and thousands and millions of users who use our product every single day to get their work done. The M-Matrix emulated app here, I'm going to go check it out by deploying it on my Mac in a Windows virtual machine and just kick some tires and see how it goes, because it can do like pretty decent graphics and stuff. So it can do like DirectX 11 stuff in a virtual machine. So MXO, I'm sure the client's probably like DX9 or DX8 at best. So it should run just smoothly.
So on my YouTube channel, I want to say about a year ago, I got a couple of questions about can you run the emulator on Mac? And I'm like, yeah, I just don't know how to do it. So now when I get those questions, I can point them into your direction.
Yeah. And I'll point them to the free download.
All right. Well, I'll have to get that. I'll go and I'll put that in my install video. I'll link that. So is this for like home use or business? Have I seen it in the healthcare industry?
Yeah, actually, yes, yes, and yes. So each product has like a for personal use and a commercial use licensed product. The personal use licenses are called Player. So you have Fusion Player and Workstation Player. Those are free for personal use. And then we have Fusion Pro and Workstation Pro, and those are commercial products. You pay like $200 for a perpetual license for that. They're pretty sweet. I gotta admit,
it's nice when people can stand behind their product and recommend it wholeheartedly. It's one of the things that really, as a consumer, it really sells me. I love that.
Oh, I use this thing every day. I don't know how I would get work done if I didn't. I need other operating systems, and I don't want to walk around with like three different computers, right? So it just makes perfect sense. And we've got a version coming out for the new Apple Silicon Macs. That's coming out pretty soon. We're in like tech preview timeframe-ish right about now, and because this new Apple hardware like runs circles around Windows PCs nowadays, so it's really nice to see that improvement happen.
Well, I have been a Windows user for as long as I can remember. So maybe with the exception of my phone, I have an iPhone, and I was thinking about going back to an Android, but I don't know. I don't really know that I want to switch everything over and all that. But as far as the PCs, there's always been performance issues with the computers. They always slow over time. Is VMware something that is going to help me if I decide to go Mac, is going to help me maybe just run Matrix online?
Definitely. I mean, one of the things I've always sort of said is like an Intel Mac is basically the most versatile computer and the most value for your dollar that you can get on the market today. The M1 devices are really nice, but they don't do x86 at all. So, and you can't buy a copy of Windows for those devices either, because bunch of reasons. So, on the Intel, you can run Mac, Windows, and Linux all from the same Mac. Mac hardware also tends to last a lot longer than PC hardware. You're not prone to the same type of malware and config drift and just bloat that happens on a typical Windows system. The idea of like reformatting your Mac, I don't think I've done that maybe like once, and it was for not, I didn't need to do it. I did it for I was testing something and I needed something kind of vanilla. Plays games, does all your productivity stuff. It gets used by corporations to run their businesses day to day. Developers use it to build software for the cloud, as well as test apps in different browsers and kind of stuff. It's really neat. Like when you run a computer inside a computer, all the things you can do with that first computer, you can do inside the computer inside the computer. And so it's very meta, and I think that's perfect for folks who are familiar with the Matrix and concepts thereof.
The Matrix inside the Matrix.
You got it.
No, I don't like that theory.
I know you don't. That's why I said that.
Which is what, that Zion is just another layer of the Matrix?
Yeah.
No, I think that they patched VMware in for part four here. So we're going to have a Matrix within a Zion within a Matrix.
Yeah, they'll just, at the end of the movie, they'll just zoom back like that, you know, that screen. And instead of going into the display into Neo's, the room where Neo's being interrogated, they're pulling out of it, and it's just somebody sitting in front of a PC with a virtual machine.
It's like the end playing of MXO. That TV show, I don't remember the name, where you learn that everything was in a snow globe. I don't remember the name of that TV show, but at the end you learn that all of the TV show was actually a building in a snow globe. So that could be like that, the Matrix. I could see them do that, because from what I understand, the next movie is going to be meta. That's all I've read about it. So I don't know what that means. That could mean anything. So it's, I'm curious.
It's a Matrix, Matrix inside of a Matrix inside of a Matrix.
Yeah.
Yo, dog, I heard you like Matrixes.
Now I'm trying to find that series. Is it Saint Elsewhere?
Yeah. Sometimes
I was thinking it was the movie Elf.
No. It could have been Citizen Kane, I think. There is a snow globe that's broken in it. Anyway, I was about to say that I've decided to make a radio for the Matrix emulator, and people on the Discord were like, well, you should do Radio Free Zion. So that's what I did. And so there is actually a radio called Radio Free Zion right now that you can play inside the game. And it's not a real radio like it used to be. I don't talk on it. It's mostly 8 hours of music with little sounds in between. I've made like 40 little sound bites that I put in between every songs. And so if you want to listen to it, it's on Discord. People were like, use the name, Radio Free Zion. It's based on Radio Free Europa, so it's already a thing. So I was like, yeah, okay. And it's been fun just finding a lot of songs from the 90s and in the early 2000s. And I've made like playlists with, I don't know how many songs on it. I invite you to go on the Discord and just search for Radio Free Zion, and you'll be able to listen to it. It's 24/7.
I will definitely do that.
Yeah, it was fun.
Is that the Discord that's linked from the emulator page?
Yeah. It's also basically the only Discord about the Matrix in general. It's not just about Matrix Online, but it's a lot of Matrix Online people.
It's by far the best Matrix-related Discord I've been a part of. Head and shoulders.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, some of the Discords are not great places to be. They're all bots and immature people and trolls. But this one is, if you want to talk Matrix at all, then this is definitely the place. This is, and it's kind of replaced the Matrix MXOEMU.info forums.
Oh yeah, forums are done. Anyway,
I don't know. So. They're like a bus stop.
Yeah,
they're like a bus stop in the desert. So
yeah,
everybody's on Discord. About a year ago, I also was looking for anything and everything for Radio Free Zion, and I was looking for the logo. So I actually put together a T-shirt because I put together a couple of other T-shirts, like the beta shirt and stuff like that, on a Teespring site, and I really wanted a Radio Free Zion shirt. So the way I figure, if I want it, then there's got to be other people out there that want it too. So I put together my own little logo. I tried to get as close to the original as possible. And it's got the tagline, jack in, crank it up. So since it's not my original design, I put no markup on it. And anybody that wants it, I'll put a link out there for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we're making some sweet money out of Radio Free Zion right now.
Just, you know, you wear that shirt, you go to the Matrix 4 premiere, assuming that that's an in-person thing, and you're going to have at least one Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at you. Like,
hey, man, I was there too, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like I said, Radio Free Zion did big things for the Matrix Online community, and it hasn't gone unnoticed. It's been appreciated. So thank you very much for being a part of that. It was wonderful, and it's going to live on.
So good to hear. Now you definitely got to get a touch of Sundog and get him on here and get his take on all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I just hope that we hear in the Matrix 4, like they're driving in a car or something. It's like, you know, DJ Fire from, you know, Radio Free Zion coming out of the car radio. Oh my God, that would be so awesome.
They just get in the car, they turn it on, and just like jack in,
crank it up.
And then they just turn it off right then and there. But just to have that little bit.
Oh, we're in like 2021, so they would be listening to a true crime podcast or something like that. There is no radio anymore. It's over.
It's truth.
Well, there is mine that is running on Winamp, like back in the days.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
This was super. You know, it's just very nostalgic to talk about a lot of this stuff. And it's just good to connect with folks that were a part of that whole thing. I mean, it was, like you said, it was really something. So I appreciate you having me on.
Aranos, you want to take us out?
Yes, I'm going to bed.
All right.
No, it was great talking to you guys. Much. Whenever you want to do that again, Vesuvius, you let me know. And I'll be there.
And when this gets published, you share me the link, and I'll throw it over at Snowball. Cool beans. Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Cheers.
And there you have it, Red Pills. DJ Fire from Radio Free Zion. And you can follow DJ Fire on Twitter at MikeRoySoft. And get your copy of VMware Fusion at VMware.com. VMware Fusion. Harness the full power of your Mac when you use VMware Fusion to run Windows, Linux, and more. And big thanks to Aranos for joining us. You can find him on Discord at SOFIANE number 8168 on Discord. I'll also have a link to Aranos' new Radio Free Zion stream, so check the show notes for that. As always, be sure to follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at VesuviusMXO. Drop into my Teespring shop if you're looking for any Matrix Online merchandise and digital downloads. And finally, I'll have a link for DJ Snowball's YouTube channel, aka Steve Saylor, the Blind Gamer, in the show notes as well. Thank you very much, Red Pills. I am Vesuvius, shutting down.